It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour. Hey, everyone. So my name is Maggie, and I am currently experiencing heartburn.
I just am. It wasn't a joke.
Is that your
intro? That's my intro. That's what I have to say for myself. I had fucking vegan chick patty for dinner and then coffee ice cream, and my heart hurts, and it's really hot.
I am so sorry. I'm so very, very sorry. Hey, everyone. Good evening. I'm Mia. Today I walked into a wall and I apologized to it. So that's how my week's going.
What?
Oh, so sorry. So sorry.
Wait, when and where?
At clinical. Oh, also, so there's a door to my patient's room that led to a different little, like, vestibule waiting room. It was like a negative pressure room, even though, like, they just placed the patient in there because it was an open room.
Got it. Yeah.
But the room has the capacity to be a negative pressure room. And so I, like, kept knocking on the outside door too, and then no one would answer, and I was like, right, duh, like, no one's in there.
Right, right, right.
And then I walked into the wall in there, and then I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I was like, wow, this like, family can definitely hear me. Like, they can just, like, fumbling in between, like, oh, good God, oh.
Talking to myself.
Yeah. So, the wall was okay. It was like, oh, no, don't worry, it happens all the time.
Well.
Talk back to me.
Every week ends. And so we can all look forward to
Every life is gonna end.
Okay, so on this episode, it is the final week of Pride.
It's over for you bitches.
How long are you waiting to say that?
4 weeks.
If it sounds a little loud, we're recording with the window open because it's really hot, so...
Suck it up.
Get over it. This week, we're going to be starting with a quick check-in, and then the two of us are getting married. We just wanted to mark the anniversary of gay marriage being legalized, so we decided to tie the knot.
I didn't know. Surprise wedding.
And then we are wrapping it up with some bitchcraft.
Stay tuned.
Let's ride!
Dyke sound bites.
Okay, so we wanted to start off this episode talking a little bit about what's been going on. It has been a really turbulent week, I think, as we all know, and there's been a lot of information coming in a lot of different directions. Really, I think I'm specifically referring to the human rights crisis that's happening along the southern border of the U.S. and also in detention centers in pretty much every major city and along major ports. So basically, we just wanted to chat a little bit about it, talk about kind of just a brief rundown of what's been happening, because I know that sometimes things can move quickly and it can be hard to keep things straight, and then talk just a little bit about resources and ways to get involved and donate your time and your money, and then move into a check-in about us and the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
So just in terms of what has been going on this week, basically, for those of you who don't know, there was no new law that was put in that said that parents and children should be or needed to be separated. This was all something that had been kind of dormant for a long time. Mm-hmm. And basically what the law was before is that if someone is being prosecuted for a crime, you are able to separate children from their parents. That is legal. And if, for example, someone is being charged with a misdemeanor, you're not. And so what had happened before is that typically people who were entering the United States illegally,
Also, just as a quick note in this situation, the Trump administration is deeming seeking asylum to be illegal. So people who have crossed over the border and are applying for asylum when they arrive.
Which is bullshit.
Right. Just borders are fake.
For people who were doing what was deemed illegal, they were being charged with misdemeanors, which means that people were not being separated. But the Department of Justice decided to start prosecuting every single family that crossed the border illegally, which meant that they were separating children and families. And the numbers have fluctuated a lot, but right now there are about 2,000 children who are separated from their parents and have no, there's no accountability, there's no plan to reunite these families, except for some of the work that organizations are doing to help. There's no plan on the government's part. A lot of you might have heard that Trump did sign an executive order also this week saying that this family separation was going to stop. Basically, to just kind of summarize what that means is that he has said that you can no longer, for people who are being detained at the border, you can no longer separate children from their parents when they're being detained, so you can't house them in separate detention centers. But there is an agreement from 1997. It's called the Flores Agreement. What it dictated is that you can't hold a child in detention for more than 20 days at a time. So basically the thing to watch out for here is that what Trump has said is, okay, we're going to keep families together in detention. So A, he's still detaining families. Right. Those are still people who are being detained in cages. But at the same time, there's also the risk that he will either expedite cases so that they still fall within that 20-day rule, but then children are still being separated from their families, because if they're being charged with a crime, then that is still legal to separate the children. Or they're going to try to find some workaround of the agreement and make it longer than 20 days. So basically, guards are not down.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of people are saying that we are back to Obama-era immigration policy, which is, there is truth to the fact that the Department of Justice and Trump have accelerated the speed and aggressiveness and publicity of how this is happening, for sure. But yes, this is not something that is entirely 100% new mm-hmm. since 2016.
Mm-hmm. Also, it is important to note that in the U.S., I think right now I've seen a lot of, it does mean something that people are outraged. And I think that that has done something, you know, mm-hmm. like Trump is aware that people are pissed. At least that's a thing.
Right.
But I do feel frustrated when people say, like, this is an America. I'm like, this is exactly the United States of America.
Right.
This is the Trail of Tears. This is slavery. This is
internment camps.
Yes.
In World War II.
Yes. Like, this is historically exactly the very foundation of this country.
Yes.
Not to say that that really changes much, besides the fact that, like, this is just another part in a pretty fucked up piece of what is American history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have heard about the Trail of Tears in the one paragraph that your social studies textbook afforded it in mm-hmm. elementary school and middle school and high school. You know, you've heard about these things. You've heard about these things that are clearly human rights violations. And you've thought to yourself, how could this possibly happen? Here we are.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I think it's important that people are angry and are talking about it a lot, and that's great, but it is important, too, to keep in mind the historical context and that this kind of trauma lingers and is intergenerational and, you know, that, yeah. you know, him signing this, you know, executive order. And I also saw a tweet that said, just because you sign an executive order ending internment camps for babies when people get mad because they find out that you have created internment camps for babies doesn't mean you didn't originally create internment camps for babies.
Right, right. Just in terms of ways, though, to kind of move it to a more active note, there are some things that you can do to continue to get involved. Call your senators. If you live in a state that has any Republican representatives in particular, if you have Democratic representatives, do it too. Mm-hmm. Don't let them forget, like, just because someone is a Democrat and in Congress and votes to not separate families in different detention centers doesn't mean that they're totally great on all of their policy. So,
right.
But particularly if you do have Republican representatives, call. There are so many ways to do it. In particular, if you go to 5calls.org, you can put in your zip code and they will give you a script. They will give you the telephone number. It almost like walks you through mm-hmm. making calls, which is really, it's a really good resource. Another one in particular is, and I'm sure many of you have seen this on Facebook, is RAICES, R-A-I-C-E-S. This is an organization in Texas that is basically doing incredible work, mostly legal, to help these families, people who are asylum seekers, people who are undocumented, in making sure that they are getting as much help as possible, be that paying immigration bonds or providing legal services or making sure that their cases are continued along and tracking down children to help reunite them with their parents. So we just wanted to start with that.
It is important too, and we want to share these resources as widely as possible, and this is a platform where we're able to do that. So we wanted to just take a second, check in, mm-hmm. kind of synthesize some information, because sometimes it can be an information overload, and so being able to hear it in a succinct way that kind of makes everything accessible, like Maggie just outlined, can be really helpful, and now there's some resources as well. Hey, everybody. So now we're going to do a little bit of a check-in with each other as we move into this episode. So we're going to play Rosebud Thorn and just say what's up.
Samia, what's up?
Okay. So my rose for this week is last night I had so much to do. So I'm in my summer semester of nursing school, which is extra accelerated. It's just really fast paced. There's not a lot of time. This coming week is the only week in the entire summer that I don't have any exams, which is insane.
Oh my God.
So it's just really fast paced, really intense. And I just have been feeling like I'm just kind of underwater for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. I don't know. What day is it?
How long have I been alive?
Yeah. Who knows? But last night I had this crazy to-do list. I just had so much to do. I had a full presentation I needed to finish. I had like a discussion post I needed to do. I had a full SOPI, which is like, if anyone is in nursing school or even medical school, you'll know that. It's just basically a giant patient report, but they can take forever to fill out with every medication the person's taking, their past medical history, a full review of systems, subjective data, whole thing. I actually finished my entire to-do list last night before 10 p.m.
Oh my God.
And I was just sitting on my bed like, so I get to like shower? And it was such a good feeling. It was so relaxing. So I'm just feeling really productive lately. I feel like I'm kind of on top of my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Handed in all that stuff. Gave my presentation today. Killed it. Like, yes. I'm just feeling productive.
Congratulations. That feels so, nice. Yeah. How was that shower?
Oh, so good. I bought a new body wash, too.
Woo!
So that's good.
So my rose right now is actually not dissimilar. My rose is work, which is a fun thing. So this week, it's actually two reasons at work. So this week, I went to a talk. They're often visiting lecturers who will come in since I work in a research department. And there is a woman who came in who is – she got her PhD and is now – I think exclusively a full-time researcher, but her background is in physical therapy, and she conducted a gorgeous clinical trial. It was, okay, so my previous job was in comparative effectiveness research. Comparative effectiveness research is awesome, but when it's a non-pharmacological thing, so if you're like, you're not studying a new drug or something like that, it can be really difficult to measure. It's very, very difficult to conduct studies like that that don't have a lot of pitfalls, and I just listened to a lecture about a gorgeous study. I loved it so much. It was like, oh, right, like, this is why, like, I want to be an occupational therapist. Like, this is why I do research. Like, I care about doing this kind of amazing work. Also, I went out to drinks with my coworkers for the first time since I got my new job, and they're all really nice, so.
Oh, that's great.
They're just really sweet. They, like, amazing. I didn't, like, want to go home and, like, shower off the bad time. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, this was just nice.
Oh, that's amazing. That's hard to find.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, yeah. So what is your – let's do thorn and then bud.
Okay. So my thorn is actually also school.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really bad exam this week. I passed. You know, there's – it's pretty intense sometimes in, you know, in nursing school and many other fields. If you don't reach a certain grade – you are at risk for failing out of the program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've passed. I technically am fine. But it was just, you know, the exam just felt kind of like shit. Didn't feel like I knew what to do better next time. And it was just frustrating. It was a really frustrating exam. And I think I didn't really have an idea before I started nursing school about the ways that grades can really fuck with your self-esteem.
Yeah.
Because for so long I had been studying humanities where, you know, I always got grades, but I kind of, it was grades based on like my ability to critically think,
right,
which is really different than perform or you're done.
Right.
And so I think I'm trying to be gentle with myself about that kind of thing, but it's really hard when it's really easy for your brain to see that number and equate your self-worth to that.
Yeah.
And that kind of got in my head. And so for this semester, I'm really trying not to trip over that kind of stuff and let that be a pitfall, you know, because that's just going to make me feel worse and not prepare better for the next exam. So, yeah, that was a frustrating experience, but trying to kind of take care of myself and be like, well, it's first of all, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, this isn't who I am.
Damn. Well, that shit's still really hard to do, to be like, I'm still amazing.
Yeah. How about you?
My thorn for this week has actually been like a couple weeks in the making, but I will often not sleep a lot in the spring anyways. And don't normally feel tired. That's a pretty usual thing that my body does every year. But there, for the past couple of weeks, I've had a really hard time sleeping. And so, you know, insomnia is not new to me. It's like a bummer. It sucks. Like, I'll stay up too late. It just like won't feel very good. But I have like gotten to a point where like I've been falling asleep at work, like at my desk, and like my boss will like walk over to staple something and I'll like jump 3 feet in the air because they like will genuinely have been asleep. Or I fell asleep in the bathroom stall, like literally woke up with my cheek on my knee.
Oh,
like
my gosh.
That kind of fell asleep.
Oh, little baby.
Just like way too tired. And
how do you remedy that?
Honestly, 9 times out of 10, it's mental health related stuff and like things like stress and other stuff. So lately I have been just like when I'm getting really anxious or angry before bed, I will write letters and or memos that get out all of my opinions about what needs to be said to whom. And then I go to bed.
That's amazing.
It's been kind of working. Yeah. It worked for like 2 nights in a row. So I'll take it.
That's great. Yeah. I usually fall asleep with my face like stuck to my keyboard. Like all my clothes on, including my shoes.
Oh my god. Which is its own stress response, I feel like. Maybe just throwing that out there.
My stress response is sleeping. I'm like an armadillo. I just curl up and what's your bud?
My bud is that I am taking a biology class. It's one of my prereqs for OT school. And it has been really difficult because I just took a psychology class. I was like writing all the time. I can like, I'm really confident in my abilities to write. I get really stressed out by problem sets and I know how to do them. I just like was getting really panicked in the beginning and was like, I can't do molecular structures to anything. So, but this week I like have been really productive about spacing my shit out. I've like worked a little bit every day. I'm on my schedule. I'm meeting it. And so my bud is that it's like, no, like I'm going to put a good week in the books for this class and I'm going to get my ass back on.
Nice.
Back on it.
Yeah.
What's your bud?
Very similar. My bud is, so tomorrow is my, one of my days off. So tomorrow I'm going to sleep in a little bit.
Ooh.
I'm going to spring clean.
Ooh.
Clean up my room, get rid of some stuff.
It's summer now.
Yeah, I'm a little late. And then I'm going to do some life planning. So I'm going to sit down and try and, you know, figure out, okay, like, here's the clinical experiences I've had at the hospitals. What hospitals am I interested in applying to? Doing some research about what hospitals hire new grads, especially in L&D. Try and find out some stuff about planning for that kind of thing. And then just getting ahead of work. I don't have any exams this week, but I'm just... I'm looking forward to just being really productive tomorrow, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, getting to our main brew, we're talking about marriage. So, this is the anniversary, the date of release of this episode, right?
I think the date of release of this episode will be a couple days before the 3-year anniversary of gay marriage being legalized across the U.S.
So yeah, so we wanted to do this main brew celebrating the 3rd anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage in the United States. We have a lot to say. Obviously, we're conflicted because it's us. So there's a lot to say, and we're really excited.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. And I want to start with a little warm-up question.
Oh, boy.
Mia.
Yes.
Do you want to get married?
To you?
To me.
Yes! do I want to get married? Absolutely. But I think that I am very far from that. Mm-hmm. I don't love weddings. I mean, obviously I love weddings. Who am I kidding?
Right.
I don't love the idea of having a wedding. I think they're expensive. I think there's a lot of like fucked up stuff that happens and like a lot of like just unnecessary baloney that goes into a wedding.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I definitely want to get married. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Maggie? Do you want to get married?
Yeah, okay. To you? Yes. In general? Yes. To everyone? Yes. No, I mean, I agree with you. I have a lot of complicated feelings about weddings. I think in terms of like the practicality of my life, it makes a lot of sense for me to get married. Like given, I don't know, given the relationship I'm in, given like the context that we live in, again, it all kind of makes sense. But yeah, it definitely, it comes with a little bit of conflict and around things like weddings themselves too, and right. the choices that you have to make and what your wedding actually looks like and kind of what
the politics of
the politics. Yeah. Like what standard are queer people held to in terms of etiquette at a wedding? Mm-hmm. Cause it's right. like, okay, but
right.
we just got them.
Right. Like, so I think maybe an even better question to ask relating to this is, have you ever not wanted to get married? Like, has there been a period in your life where you're like, I'm never getting married?
So yes, there was a period in my life where I didn't really want to get married. And actually, there was a period in my life where I was like vehemently not going to get married. And it was right as I was on the cusp of like, I had come out to some people and not to others. And I was really coming into my queerness. And like, it was in a period where I was saying like, you know, like, I am done sleeping with men. I'm done with this. This is like, I'm moving into a new phase of my life. Like, I was kind of like forging a new path. And in that, I said like, this is it. Like, I don't want to get married. I've never like dreamt about getting married the same way. Like, I never really had those feelings the way that other people did. And it's because I'm gay and I'm just, fuck that, you know? And it's not that some of those feelings don't still live on, but I definitely feel a little bit more, again, like, it is a practical legal thing. Like, mm-hmm. there are reasons why it makes sense. Like, for health insurance and tax breaks and hospital visitation and, you know, a lot of things that are, like, there is, like, institutionalized benefit to partnering with someone.
Right.
Like, that is the society that we live in.
Right.
So I normied out and got bleak, I think, is what you're hearing.
Well, I think one of the main reasons I do want to get married is so that I can talk about my wife. Granted, as a person who sometimes dates men, dates people who wouldn't identify as a wife, I probably will have a spouse. Like, I'll probably just, like, you know, refer to whoever it is as my spouse, or I should right. now, speaking from a perspective of not knowing.
Right, right, right.
But I love the idea of, like, pissing off my wife. Like, I love that I'm probably going to annoy the shit out of my wife, and she's yeah. going to have to, like, deal with, like me putting peanut butter and jelly knives all over, you know, like, just, like, using the same knife and the jelly as I use in the peanut butter.
I love that.
Like, all the things that, like, I'm just like, yeah, someday I'm going to make some woman very annoyed. So that's, like, a
this thing. Is feminism.
But honestly, that is, as silly as that, as I'm being, and as silly as that sounds, like, there is something to me about, like, the idea of, like, making a life with somebody, that's mm-hmm. really why I want to get married. And mm-hmm. that's not marriage specific, and that's evident because queer people had been doing that for a long time before marriage was possible for them,
mm-hmm.
for us. So I do want to recognize that, like, the things that I actually look forward to in potentially getting married are really about having a partner.
Right.
Creating a life with somebody and, like, that kind of intimacy and security and joy.
Yeah.
And struggle. And having, like, that person to do all that shit with, you know? Like,
mm-hmm. when I was, like, a couple years ago even, and, like, right when I was coming out, I also had this opinion on, like, when we were young, gay marriage was starting to become legalized in places like Massachusetts and the Netherlands and California, and then they took it back, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. But
Prop 8.
I always kind of had a horizon that, like, I grew up on the coast, like, that there were going to be places where I could see myself mm-hmm. living where, like, there were gay people getting married. And I also knew enough about, like, through my aunt and uncle, like I said last week, who had so many gay friends, like, I knew enough gay people who'd had commitment ceremonies or mm-hmm. no ceremony and just were living partnerships and living together and doing that, that to me it was almost kind of like, okay, but, like, who cares? Because as a younger person who didn't really know that much about the, like, economics and the legality of being married, I was like, okay, but for the fun shit, like, who gives a fuck?
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, well, I remember once someone referring to Massachusetts to me. So Massachusetts is the Bay State.
Mm-hmm.
I remember someone referring to it as the Gay State.
Mm.
Because is Massachusetts the first state to legalize
yes.
gay marriage? So, yeah. yeah. And I remember something
like 2006 or something.
Right. Which yeah. is still like,
I know.
yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I think the Netherlands was like 2001. And yeah. then Massachusetts was 2006 or something like that.
But yeah, I remember someone referring to Massachusetts as like the gay state, and it was always kind of like a, like, I mean, I grew up very close to the lesbian capital of the world, Northampton, Mass. So like proximity to like queer partnerships was always a thing. So I think growing up, I didn't quite realize what it would mean, mm-hmm. what it meant, even what it meant to be able to live in a partnership, mm-hmm. to be able to have a life with somebody that you weren't pretending was something else.
To be able to buy a house.
Yeah.
Like, to be able to rent an apartment. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, so what is it about... So get kind of digging into that. Like, what is it about marriage itself and about the kind of history of queer people's relationship to marriage that makes you hesitant? Like, what's the ugh factor?
I wish we had an easy button that just said heteropatriarchy. That was easy. Yeah, well, okay, first of all, I'm a child of divorce, as I talked about right. in detail, actually, in the last episode, mm-hmm. But in a very posy note. But so growing up, like, I thought I was one of the first kids in my school to have divorced parents because it was a Catholic school, so, like, not very common for Catholics to get divorced, especially at that time, which, you know, it's weird. Like, I didn't know other divorced kids for a long time in my childhood, and then by the time I was, like, 12 or 13... all my friends' parents were getting divorced. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of friends whose parents are still married, and that was so bizarre to me that people mm-hmm. could stay. So, like, I had this idea, like, I had a pretty bleak perspective on marriage working mm-hmm. During, like, most of my early childhood and early teenage years. And it wasn't until I started having, like, siblings who were in really long-term serious relationships or friends or whatever, like people who were kind of more like my age or people that I was close to that I actually considered as like something that wouldn't just crash and burn.
Right.
So I think something that always made me hesitant was like the failure of marriage. Mm. How about you, Maggie? What makes you hesitant?
I think from like a personal standpoint, like... kind of talking about my own childhood and my ideas around marriage. Everyone in my family is married, like literally everyone. And there is one person in my entire extended family on all sides who had a previous marriage before the one she is
wow.
in. Like no one gets divorced. No one. And like, wow. it has actually become like a point of like, it's like pretty fucked up. Like I have a lot of very conservative religious family and they have said things along the lines, like including to this person who did have a previous marriage who's in the family have said like, we don't do that. Like we don't get divorced. That's mm-hmm. not what we do. Mm-hmm. So that's a super fun environment, but also.
Right. As I said, like I love that my parents got divorced, you know, sometimes divorce can be the best thing for a scenario, but it also can, you know, it can be hard to not see a lot of examples of healthy marriages.
And so I'm not, you know, I'm also not trying to get on this podcast and be like, hey, all of our listeners, I wish everyone in my family had gotten divorced. No, that's not how I feel. But I will say that attitude was always there, that like all of us, all of my cousins, we were all going to find a life partner. We were going to find a spouse of the opposite gender. Like, let's be clear. And like, that was going to happen. And also that it was going to happen. You know, my parents were high school sweethearts and they got married at 22. They got married like immediately after graduating college. And they definitely got married a little bit younger than like their siblings did. But most of the people in my family got married pretty young. Mm-hmm. And like even at the time that they were getting married. And so that attitude in the beginning made me like very kind of like I didn't really think there was anything else that I was going to do. That, like, obviously I was going to get married, mm-hmm. but then it has now, in terms of what makes me hesitant, that makes me really hesitant. Like, it's not that I get so many good examples of, like, loving partnerships through people in my family, but I also see there are ways that I want to do partnership and live my life that don't really work with that, and it's hard to not see marriage as kind of the be-all, end-all mm-hmm. of the conversation. You totally. Know what I mean? Are there things about it politically that make you hesitant?
Yes.
What yeah. are those?
Well, I remember some celebrity, I have no idea who it is now, but I remember some celebrity talking about how she wasn't going to get married until everybody could get married. Mm-hmm. I think I was in middle school when I heard, because it was around the time that Massachusetts legalized it, so people were kind of talking about, like, what states mm-hmm. were going to legalize it and which ones weren't. And I remember, so I was like 12 or 13 at the time being like, yeah, me neither. Like, marriage is like horrible when it's this thing that some people have the right to do and others do not. Little did I know, I didn't have the right. So that was definitely something that...
I'm a really good ally.
I'm just a really good ally. Okay. But now, as an out queer person, yeah, I mean, I think the idea of, like, participating in something that someone else... First of all, it's just like, I don't want your pity marriage.
Right.
I don't want this, like, oh, well, you can be normal, too. And the idea that, like, I need this validation, I need someone else to recognize a relationship in my life is just, right. like, fuck that.
There is something, I know I can be so conspiracy theorist about stuff, but, like, the idea of, like, submitting in paperwork that I'm queer to the government is not, like, the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, right.
I'm just, by like, this way, doesn't feel like, eh.
Totally. Also, like, going to Catholic school, the role of women is not great in their own lives, you know, and just, like, the woman is the conduit.
Right.
That always skeeved me out. Like, first of all, wearing white. Second of all, the procession being given from mm-hmm. one man to another. Maybe those things bothered me in part because I didn't really want to deal with a man. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I don't want, you know, whatever. I don't want you. But just, like, you know, the woman as property is icky, and that always bothered me. And then I also, now that I'm a little bit older, just, like, the entire capitalist empire of weddings.
True.
From dresses to DJs to venues to flowers to food to...
Wedding cakes. Ooh, womp.
It's just, it's really stupid. And I think it's easy for people to recognize that it's stupid, but it's also really damaging, I think.
Yeah.
Like, the emotional toll that planning a wedding takes.
Oh, 100%.
It's just, like, brutal.
100%. I remember one of the things about, like... the role of women in marriage is that, you know, we talked about this, I think it was actually on our Hot Takes episode. We were talking about the fact that, like, women should have the right to make choices that work for them, given what it takes to, like, live in a patriarchal society. That being said, women are not all on equal playing fields in terms of the social capital that they have and the privileges that they're afforded. And in addition, choices aren't made in a vacuum. So, like, you can choose to do things and it can be, like, it doesn't make you less of a feminist to choose things which are more stereotypical or, like, more of what the, like, traditionally women have done. But it doesn't mean that the socialization to do those things didn't happen to you. Like, it doesn't mean that, like, that choice was, again, like, made in a vacuum. And I think of marriage kind of the same way, that people often talk about things like merging finances and, you know, splitting domestic labor and, like, what it means to be in an equal partnership in a heterosexual marriage. And I get that. I do get that. But marriage has been a tool to literally trap women so long, has, like, been a way to, like, keep women with literally no power, like, no money, no ability to leave, no ability to protect themselves, no ability to get out of something. Like, it's, like, a legally binding contract that says, like, you're stuck. And that does not, I do not, I'm not, it doesn't mean that I'm like, oh my God, all opposite sex marriages are terrible. Right. They're all the worst. Like, no, obviously not. But it is, if I'm not going to approach that with caution from, like, the beginning to the end, then, like, I'm doing myself a disservice as, like, a non-binary person, as a woman in this society. Like, I can't do that. Well, I have a question for you about gay mainstream organizing and whatnot. So just, like, around,
I'm
like,
so gay.
We're talking. So, you know, like, we're talking about how marriage has not only, like, an icky past, but, like, is a tool for, like, to reinforce heteropatriarchy. So do you, like, how do you feel about the centering on it in mainstream gay organizing? Like, how do you feel about gay marriage becoming, like, the topic for gay people and LGBTQ plus people in general? Like,
I'm rolling my eyes. That's how I feel. I think, thinking about what you were just saying about equal playing fields, the idea of centering something that's feels kind of superfluous a lot of the time, as far as weddings go, Because, right, that's the image that we get. It's not just about marriage. It's like, and they had this wedding, and they went to the courthouse, and, like, you too can get carried away from your wedding in a fucking, I don't know, pumpkin. You know, like, I think that that really, really frustrates me. I think I understand that it really is meaningful for a lot of people to have a lot of the legal protection of a marriage. Mm-hmm. And then, as we were also saying, that there is something special about being able to say, without anyone being able to question it, like, no, this is my wife.
Yeah.
Like, I'm married to this person. This right. is my husband. Like, that's my husband.
Right.
Like, I don't want to dismiss that, because I can understand that that's a huge deal.
Yes. In someone's particularly life. For people with children.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But that's a huge deal. But I think this, like, weird centering on weddings is just, like, slapping a Band-Aid over every other important issue in queer communities. And I think it also erases a lot of the experience of people who don't, who, like, marriage is not their priority because they're worried right. about, like, their physical safety, their well-being,
right.
like, discrimination and violence that they experience right. because of their identities. So I think that's really frustrating.
I think it's, you know, marriage is, like, it's, as we were saying earlier, like, for some people, it can be, like, a practical legal tool for a lot of different things. Like, it can be really important in, again, hospital visitation, adoption. Like, I'm not going to pretend like lesbian women were getting their babies taken from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like there were many, many court cases about it. So I know that marriage plays is a big part in that. Immigration, like mm-hmm. marriage is really, really important to like who is able to stay and who's able to get visas to stay in the country and get a green card. But I think it's, what's the most disappointing to me is that, like, why that is not part of a much larger narrative of, like, other legal tools that queer people should have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that, like, the priority isn't on, like, there are, what is it, like, 20 states where you can be fired for being gay?
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, almost, like, 2/3 of the states in the U.S., I think, you can be fired for being trans. Like, it's just that there are so many other on-the-ground organizing type of things that can be done, and B, even if you're going to take a more, like, buttoned-up mainstream political approach, there's just other stuff
yeah.
that's important. It's like, how in this Trump era when people are like, well, we're really worried that Trump's going to get rid of gay marriage, I'm like, that is not what I'm worried about right. as a queer person right now.
Right.
At all. No. Like,
also, I think the biphobia and bisexuality erasure that can happen with gay marriage yeah. or with marriage in general. I remember talking to my brother when I first came out, I was identifying as bisexual. And I'm not opposed to being referred to as bisexual or mm-hmm. as identifying with bisexual. I guess the bisexuality episode, it's been a little bit since then. So just as a refresher, like, I identify as queer, but, like, am, you know, date whoever.
Right.
But I remember being, when I first came out as bisexual to my brother and talking with him about it, I was like, well, I'm just really frustrated because I feel like, and it was funny, I was like, I don't know, in high school,
mm-hmm.
but I remember like a fear and a frustration of mine was what would happen when I got married.
Yeah.
Because I was like, when I get married, whoever I marry is going to solidify one way or the other what my actual quote unquote sexuality is.
Right.
Because if I marry a guy, then it was a phase.
Right.
If I marry a woman, then I was gay all along. It was a stepping right. stone towards coming out as a lesbian.
Right.
Not that I think that doesn't happen when bisexual people don't get married.
Right, yeah.
But, like, that still happens, right. and whether, even when they are single, whether they right. are in a long-term partnership as they get older or not,
mm-hmm.
that's still, like, that's just an inevitable thing that is really shitty that people do and should stop doing. But I think it's particularly frustrating with weddings because I think something that makes me hesitant about weddings that's not even related to queerness necessarily. I mean, it is in this episode. I mean, it is right now when I'm talking about bisexuality. But
right.
in general, something that makes me uncomfortable about getting married is like the performance and the attention.
Yes.
I love attention.
Same.
But I do not want all those heads turning and looking at me
yes.
walking down an aisle.
Yes.
I do not want people talking about my wedding for months before
Say it
and
again.
After. I don't want people posting pictures. I don't want a hashtag. I don't want to be this, like, spectacle. And I feel like that's especially true with gay marriages, gay
yes.
weddings and gay couples because oh, like, isn't it so sweet? It's so patronizing.
Yes.
Oh, they get to do it too. It's like, okay.
Right.
Like, sure. And so I think that also there's a particular kind of speculation that can happen when a bisexual person gets married.
Yes.
About that kind of deciphering the person's sexuality. Or that, like, when you go to a wedding, you're not thinking at all about the sexuality of the people getting married.
No.
Unless they're gay.
No,
exactly. So that's frustrating to me. It's like, I don't want people, like, sitting around talking about it, thinking mm-hmm. about it. Mind your business.
One of the things that kind of brings us into the topic of what it means for queer people to get married and kind of like what it means to navigate it. And one of the things about gay people getting married that I have actually been talking about a lot with my mom and sister recently is like when two gay people are getting married, they're not coming from families with a lot of gay people yeah. and typically not in their immediate family and particularly often not their parents, which means that like the idea of a marriage being traditionally like bringing two families together or like in some way like a merging in a like a meeting and loving of two families, like, you know, like Nancy and I are in an interfaith relationship. Like, even though I practice Judaism, like I would say like I was raised Christian. That very much is like what I bring to our relationship. And so like those ideas are like, okay, I'm coming from a family who has this background. She's coming from a family who has that background as a Jewish person. And like, are like when they meet each other, like that is a like more of a difference between the two of us. But like with gayness, it's just the two of us.
Right.
Like we have that in common only with the people that we choose. And so what it means for a wedding is that like the majority of your fucking wedding is straight people.
Right.
Like that's not ugh.
That's not fun. They're terrible.
I know. It's like, girl, you don't even know how to party that well.
Bad dancers. We're kidding. Yeah. Not. Actually, I've never been to a gay wedding.
I don't know why I gasped like
I
that.
I am
like,
waiting for you. I know. And I wonder what the like statistics would be on how frequently, like the size difference between gay marriages and straight marriages. I mean, I'm yeah. sure that it's smaller. I feel like queer people probably have smaller weddings. One, because less money. Two, because it's just like, it's your wedding. You don't want people there who are going to be talking shit. You don't want people right. there who aren't going to get it. So that might mean being like, oh, we don't have the money to have a big wedding, but really also maybe saying that when you're like, I just don't want to invite my weird great aunt who's going to be fucked up.
Oh, Nancy and I talk about this constantly. It is something that like genuinely, the older I get, the more Nancy and I talk about like when in the coming years it would make sense for us to get married. And like, I think about my family. It is incredibly fucking stressful that I'm like, okay, so people who don't know me, don't speak to me, and ignore me and my partner regularly at holidays and, like, right. literally don't know anything about her except for the fact that she's a Jewish lesbian.
Right.
You're not invited. Like, there right. are so many.
I don't
so
want
many...
your money.
Yeah, don't come.
Your gravy boat is not worth it.
No, it is not. Like, we already live together. We don't need any more kitchen appliances. Stop it. Like, I just, I don't, it's really weird. Like, it is so important to me to have a gay wedding. Like, not just a gay wedding because there's two gay people getting married,
a
but, like,
a gay wedding.
Yeah, like, that is it. And, like, if you cannot hang with that, then, like, you're not really invited.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one of the things that I wanted to say kind of in regards to, it touches a little bit on the idea of, like, queer people making community with each other and being different from their families and that being kind of, like, a highlight, how different mm-hmm. you are from your families when you're gay, is one of the really cool things, though, about gay marriage is that, like, marriage means a lot of different things to different people, depending on, like, their religious background and how they were raised and how their family does things. And, like, one of the things that I don't think we... Listen, I am quick to shit on gay marriage and, like, why it is, like, the most normie stuff ever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't think we always give enough credit to, like, what that can mean to people's mm-hmm. relationships to their families, their blood families. And, right. like, their, like, ability to navigate the, like, various intersections that they're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Is there anything else?
I don't think so.
I did mention, you know, the importance of gay marriage for, you know, family is really, really important in making decisions about healthcare, in healthcare proxies, in times of crisis, in medical emergencies. So that is something that I think deserves a little bit of teasing out too, of like mm-hmm. those kind of logistical benefits of marriage that we've kind of hinted at and talked about throughout the episode. Because that's not the fun stuff.
Right.
You know, like, it's, taxes aren't fun. Having to be someone's healthcare proxy is not fun. But being able to support your partner in all of those trying lifetimes, in being able to see your partner when they're ill.
Right.
Is like, that's someone's life. You know, I think that that's a huge emotional relief. Right. Is knowing that you have that kind of safety. Maybe.
Right. Maybe.
You know.
Because I think, and the point that I don't want to lose is that, like, there are certain places that you can live where this is happening less and less frequently, which is a good thing. But the reality is that, like, oftentimes unmarried straight couples will be afforded kind of, like, we'll let it slide things. Like, okay, technically it's family only, but you can come back and see this sick person. Or, like, okay, like, normally we wouldn't let you ride in the ambulance, but we will. Mm-hmm. Like, and the thing is that, like, it's not just that gay people have historically not been given that. It's also that, like, finding out that you're gay meant that you weren't going to get adequate treatment in the ambulance.
Right.
Like, so, and so in all of the ways that it makes me so angry when it feels like straight people are like, gay marriage is amazing. I was so excited I cried. I'm also like, I was like really angry when gay marriage passed because it was really, for me, like at a climax of being very, really frustrated with like mainstream gay politics. Mm-hmm. But also like, I cry all the time about gay stuff. Fuck right. you. I don't care. Like,
right. Oh, this is the first time you thought of it?
Do you have any final thoughts?
I'm getting to get married.
Okay.
Tonight. Do I have final thoughts? I do have a date tomorrow, so I'll let you guys know. As usual, Maggie and I have complicated feelings about everything. So basically, you know, as much as I think that there are limitations, I think sometimes that there can be a disservice to queer communities when we just pay attention to the things that are fun to think about or pretty to look at, like weddings. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot more to a gay life than marriage, than even romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important to consider that there are many, many other factors. Mm-hmm. And that there are also a lot of reasons why people don't want to get married. Some people just don't want to get married, whether they're gay or not.
Right.
They just don't want to. And right. I think that it's important to give people the space to talk about what's important to them and why, and politically how they feel about things. Yes. But also that people deserve to be happy and to do what makes them happy and to have security in some ways.
Yeah.
But the devil's work is never done.
The devil's work is never done.
And it's important to not let our guard down and be distracted by shows of gay acceptance.
Yeah.
When there's a lot more work to be done.
I completely agree with that. That is kind of my final thought, too, is that I agree with Mia in the idea of, like, it's not even really about marriage, but around the idea of, like, really maintaining an eye on, like, legal benefits and the logistics of being alive as a queer person. Like, we don't need to lose sight of that. That's really important. Like, housing, healthcare. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Physical safety.
Yes. Yeah, devil's working overtime. All right, so to close out this episode, we are going to do another round of Bitchcraft, which I don't think we've done in a while.
No, I don't think we have.
So we have two picks for you today on people that we actually both know personally. We each know our respective person and are really doing cool shit out there. So Mia, you want to go first?
Yeah, so I want to talk about a friend of ours and fellow Mount Holyoke alum.
Woo!
So Riley Smith is who I want to talk about today. So Riley is a friend of ours.
From school.
Mm-hmm. Has a great social media presence and was making a lot of YouTube videos for a while, talking about a lot of issues affecting queer people, especially queer youth, talking about relationships and self-care and self-love, and then fun videos too, like favorites and sharing just about their life. So you can follow them on Instagram. Their handle is The Bike Dyke, and we will be posting about them on Instagram and including them in our bibliography on our website as well. And also you can watch their YouTube videos. If you search Riley Smith or The Bike Dyke in YouTube, you will find their videos.
One of the things that I really like about Riley's online presence. So for one thing, they were, I suppose it's past tense now, they were a Point Scholar. So for those of you who don't know, the Point Foundation is, I think, the largest LGBTQ plus scholarship foundation in the United States. And they and Point Scholars have the opportunity to do really cool research and really do important work within queer communities and local queer communities. And Riley definitely has taken that into what they do online. I love to see, you know, their YouTube videos are really honest and really kind of generous with what they're willing to share to connect, particularly with queer youth.
Mm-hmm. Riley used to give me a lot of free coffee at Mount Holyoke, but also wrote an amazing thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how we started chatting. We just like met in the library, but just a really great person to have on your feed, and I suggest you follow them.
Yeah. Maybe. So my bitchcraft pick is actually somebody that I went to high school with, and so her name is Hannah Bowers, and she is living in LA now. She is a musician. So Hannah really is a songwriter first and foremost, and all of her projects sound really different. But with her first album, I would say if you are a fan of Alanis Morissette, even like Avril Lavigne, if you like bands like AW, AW is the intro, is the artist who does the intro to Query with Cameron Esposito, just so you know.
Great song.
Basically, she can fit a little bit into the pop punk genre, but has a lot of variety. One thing that's really exciting that happened pretty recently is that her song Daydreams was featured in the indie film Miss Arizona. So the film is in festival rotation right now and is waiting to be on distribution, but you can hear it in the trailer, actually. So I will post the YouTube link on where to find that. She'll be releasing another single in July, so look out for that. But I actually kind of wanted her work to speak for itself. So first, I want to play for you a clip from her most recent single, Nobody. So here it is. I've been living with an empty girl inside of me. She's nobody. She's nobody. So that was Nobody by Hannah Bowers, and I also want to play just a little clip of When We Get Back Together from her album. So take a listen. When you remember that you love me, will you tell your new girlfriend about the past? Will you run to me, girl? You're not done with me yet, and I think that I get it, yeah. So yeah, so Hannah is living in LA and recently graduated from college and is really kickstarting her career as a musician. And so we wanted to share her and make sure that she got on your feed as well of cool LGBTQ people to watch out for. So you can follow her on Instagram. Her handle is TheHannahBowers. Bowers is spelled B-O-W-E-R-S.
Be sure to follow our Bitchcraft picks on Instagram and stay tuned to our Instagram for some pictures of them and profiles. They're both cute, obviously.
Yes.
And be sure to check out the resources we mentioned in the beginning of this episode relating to current events in the United States politically. And let us know your thoughts and feelings about gay marriage. We will be accepting marriage proposals via DMs on our contact form on our website.
Yes.
Twitter works as well for marriage proposals.
Diamond rings. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Catch us in for our next episode. We're going to be talking about Queer for the Summer, not the Demi Lovato song spinoff. Cool for the Summer. See what I did there? Huh? No. But we want to be talking a little bit about what it's like to affirm your gender identity and kind of how your style plays out dressing in the heat, because that can be really hard to do.
Yeah. So. We're trying to stay hydrated this summer.
Yeah. That's it. It's just tips on how to retain water. All right. See you guys next time.
Summer fun.
Yay.
Happy Pride.